Jimmy, Jimmy Crane, Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Jimmy Crane's an improv nerd. Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Oh, Jimmy.
Hey everybody, this is Jimmy Crane, and you're listening to another episode of Improv Nerd, sponsored by my book, Improv Therapy. If you've ever had that feeling after a show, a bad show, and you just wanted to kill yourself and you didn't know what to do with that feeling, or you're jealous of other people's success, or you feel shame, what we call performance shame, this book will help you. This is the kind of things that nobody wants to talk about that get in the way of you becoming a better improviser. So go to my website. It's only $3.99. You can get it in a PDF form, or you can get it as an ebook. Just go to jimmycrane.com and check out Improv Therapy. Also, we're brought to you by the good people at Hotel Lincoln. So the next time you find yourself here in the city of Chicago and you're looking for a cool boutique hotel that's close to everything, it's not only pet-friendly, it's also improviser-friendly as well. And you know what? It's the official hotel of Improv Nerd. We're talking about Hotel Lincoln. We got a great show for you today, and we have a great guest for you today. Tim Paul is an actor, a writer, and an improviser living here in Chicago. And he's widely known for his shows at the Annoyance Theater. Bear Force One, An Aerosmith Christmas, Fisting, a period piece, in his solo shows like Tim Paul is Retarded and No Fats, No Femmes. Now, we talked to him about everything. Since Tim is so honest and such an open book, we talked about depression and how he uses his life experience and he puts it into his writing, and why he won't ask his parents to go and see any of his shows. But before we get to the interview with Tim, I just got back from Worcester, Massachusetts, where I went to Claremont Academy, which is a high school in Worcester, and I taught 2 days of improv. And the first day was for the sophomore class, and the second day was for the freshman class. Now, the sophomores were a breeze, and the second day with the freshmen, it was a little more challenging because they're freshmen. Now, just so you understand the school, it's very diverse. There's a lot of different races, a lot of different cultures, and then you're dealing with adolescents on top of it. So the freshman class was about 18 people, and these kids, it's the period right before lunch, and they're totally rowdy. And we're in this, you can't even call it a room. It's more of a hallway than it is a room. People can walk through. There's no doors. And so I'm teaching them improv, and they want to end with freeze tag. So we end with freeze tag, and there's this tall, goofy kid who it's just been really just putting himself out there, and it's really, really funny. And he goes and he makes this great initiation to this girl who has braces, and I'm assuming she's popular just by the way during the day how the other students are responding to her and following her. And he goes, "Shall we dance, my dear?" So he comes out with a strong initiation and a strong character. And she's like, no, she doesn't accept it. So he does it again. "Shall we dance, my dear?" So she, again, just ignores what he's offering. And I say, okay, I stopped it for a second. And I said, what's going on? And she goes, he's weird. I don't want to do it because he's weird. And I was like, I mean, I felt for this kid because I was a weird kid, you know? I can totally identify with this kid. Plus, it's like, this is improv, you know, let's just accept what your partner's offering. But they weren't at that maturity level, you know? They still couldn't, you know, suspend that judgment. And I don't know where this answer came from, but I think it was inspired. And this is why I love improvising along with my classes versus coming up with an agenda. I said, you know what? I'm weird. Nobody is weirder than I am. And that kid smiled and he gave me such a big high five. And he's like, great. I love people that are weird. I'm weird too. And I want to just say this. I don't think that kid has ever gotten that kind of validation. And it just made me feel really good. And when you start improv classes, you know, you know, you're like, oh, I want to write for Colbert, or I want to write for Conan, or I want to be on the cast of Saturday Night Live. You never think, oh, I want to go into high schools and make a difference in people's lives. And I think about, had I been exposed to improv at an early age, because I came from a very neglectful household, we couldn't express our emotions, we couldn't express our creativity, how things would have been different had somebody come into a classroom and really validated for my weirdness. And let me tell you something, I'm weird. At 50 years old, I am still a weirdo. So here you go. You're going to love this interview with Tim Paul. Enjoy.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd, oh yeah. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
Here we go.
Yes. Yes.
Hi.
Hi. Are you always this subdued?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have great blood pressure. I was at the doctor's, a dermatologist for my eczema last week, and she said I have the blood pressure of a 20-year-old.
Oh, congratulations. How old are you in real life?
How old do you think I am?
Well, the beard throws me, because all these young kids now, they have beards.
That's true.
But I would guess that people always thought you were older than you really are. Is that right?
I don't know. Okay, I have a baby face when I don't have a beard.
Okay, I'm going to guess 36.
Fuck you, dude.
How old are you?
35.
Jesus. All right.
Like newly 35. Okay. Right? Not even 35 and a half.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Are you self-conscious about your age?
I'm not.
Okay.
I actually like getting older.
Okay. What do you like about getting older?
I think I wasn't very attractive when I was like, say, 20.
Okay.
I feel I'm growing into myself.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm more centered now.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty chill. I don't know. I'm getting better at sex.
Great. Now, you have no problem talking about sex.
No.
Okay. Where did that come from?
I just have been always fascinated by it. I think for me, I'm a homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
Okay.
And I feel that for me, I don't want to speak for all the queers because that's rude.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you spend so much, you spend like, say, a couple decades of your life living in complete shame of your sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun. And and so then I think part of the coming out process is just I embraced it.
So, because I think it's not just, I think it's straight and gay that people don't want to explore sex or sexuality in improv. Like, I put on my Facebook, my wife and I are trying to get pregnant, and I put, you know, we're trying to have sex or whatever, and my brother calls me up, and he's like, did you really put that on there?
Did you really put that on
yeah.
there?
Yeah. So I think there's...
I don't post like, oh, I'm trying to get my dick sucked tonight. I just have sex, and I don't put it on Facebook. I put it in my shows, and you pay me.
That's what my therapist said. He said, get off Facebook, because you're not getting paid for it.
Yeah, wait, you say when you're going to have sex with your wife to have a baby?
Yeah, I'll say we're trying to have sex tonight, or we just had sex, or something like that. Yeah. Now I'm feeling a lot of shame. Am I taking your shame?
No, I don't have shame.
Okay,
don't
great.
Don't fucking try to put shame on me. That's fascinating to me. Because we're not Facebook friends, so I'm not familiar with those status updates.
Okay, great. Well, now I'm just off it. I've been off it for a couple months.
Okay, cool.
So, you in high school, you start doing theater.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the big parts in the the speaking parts in non-musical shows,
yeah.
Right?
Mr. Hassler in the Pajama Game.
Okay.
Big Julie in Guys and Dolls.
Okay. And then in college, you're doing more serious stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to the Improv Asylum in Boston.
They actually came to my college.
They came to your college. And when you see them, what happens?
It was the first time I had seen improv and sketch live. And I think at the time I was doing The Night of the Iguana by Tennessee Williams.
Very serious.
And so, like, I've always been drawn to the stage, and then I saw them do that, and that just looked like a lot more fun. And so I left college, and then I started taking classes at Improv Asylum, and the rest is history.
And then, but you meet someone who's very important to you, and that's Brian Gallivan.
Yeah, he was my level 2 teacher at Improv Asylum, and he can take a lot of credit for my career. Because at the end of the class, he told me to keep doing it.
Had you ever gotten that encouragement up to that point?
No.
How were you when you first started at the Improv Asylum?
I think I was bad, like most students.
And then,
no offense.
How long did it take you to get good at where you were like, oh, I'm not going to kill myself after a class?
I was never suicidal after class.
Okay.
Before classes. But
are you serious?
No.
Did you have a lot of anxiety before class?
I don't deal with anxiety. I deal with depression.
Okay.
But... That's a whole... Should I answer your first question before we get into my mental health?
Wherever you'd like to go, Tim.
Luckily, because I started in Boston, and I was in Boston for about 5 years doing improv, and it's not a terribly big scene compared to Chicago, and I had the opportunity... I was performing on the main stage at Improv Asylum, and we were doing shows 5 nights a week, and then I was involved with the other theater called The Tribe that's no longer around, but there was just a lot of stage opportunities for people in Boston. This was like 10, 12 years ago. So I was kind of lucky that when I first started, I was just performing a lot.
And how does your depression factor into this? Because I've been, I suffer from depression. I get it.
Let's not compete.
Okay.
How did it factor into my improv?
Or just your life at that point.
At that point? Oh my God, I'm getting a phone call. It's on vibrate. Hold on. I think that at that point it wasn't a big factor at that moment. I mean, there's bouts.
Mm-hmm. Like, and what does a bout look for you?
It's a lot of sleeping and a lot of binge eating.
Mm-hmm.
It's a crippling apathy.
And have you had it since you've been in Chicago?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how do you get out of something like that?
Because I'm my therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about shit on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes I take Wellbutrin. I'm pretty centered with my triggers. And yeah.
Like, what is one of your triggers?
Relationships.
Mm-hmm.
When they don't work out.
Mm-hmm.
Financial stress. Just the usual. I mean, all my friends are depressed. All my improviser friends.
Yeah,
it's not special.
Right. But I think what's so great about you is you're willing to talk about it. I think a lot of improvisers have it and they're not in touch with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or don't get help, or mm-hmm. go to the bar and medicate themselves.
Yeah. I eat a lot.
Like, give me an example of one of your binges.
I'll say this. I lived in Old Town. I just moved out. The overnight staff at the Walgreens, like, the one woman, when I would walk in, she would let me know when the peanut butter Cheerios were on sale. Because she knew I liked them. And then one time she even, like, they weren't on sale, but the multigrain Cheerios were on sale. And so I bought the multigrain Cheerios, and she goes, go get the peanut butter ones.
Now, I was 300 pounds when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
That brings... For me, if I had that interaction, I would feel a ton of shame about it.
I guess I don't have time in my life for shame.
Mm-hmm.
I did in my 20s and my teens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is cheap promotion, cross promotion. Like, I talk a lot about this in my show.
Okay.
Wellbutrin whore.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, I used to be ashamed of my body,
mm-hmm.
but... there's a lot of people that want to fuck it, so, like, hey.
That's a good message for our listeners.
Yeah.
So you come to Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and you start taking improv classes at The Annoyance.
Yep.
And you take writing classes at Second City.
Yeah.
And most people who come, they want to study at The Annoyance, they want to study at Improv Olympic or I.O., they mm-hmm. want to study at Second City. You were happy at The Annoyance.
Yeah.
What was it about their style where you're like, you know what? This is for me. I don't need to explore other.
I moved here, and I had flown out a couple months before I moved here to audition for the conservatory for Second City. And I was staying with Brian, and it was during Pride Week. And so we went to the parade, and that's when I met Mick and Jen for the first time.
Mick Napier and Jen Esslin?
I didn't want to drop their names.
Okay.
And so that's when I first met them, and that was like kind of my first introduction. I knew who they were mm-hmm. before I moved here. But
were you nervous around them?
I mean, no, it was Pride. I was mm-hmm. drunk. We were having fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's there to be nervous
right.
about?
Now, when you are on Wellbutrin, do you drink as well? Don't you? You can't drink on that, right?
You can. I'm not a big drinker.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't. It's alcohol. I can have, like, a drink sometimes. I get crazy and I have a second drink.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. I love Baileys.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my weakness.
Okay.
Like a Baileys and coffee,
mm-hmm.
Baileys on the rocks.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not a big drinker.
Okay. So you meet Jen
and Mick
during Pride Week.
Yeah, and so when I moved here, I I was poor, so I decided to take one writing class at Second City and then the improv class at The Annoyance.
And, but you can't. You, but what were you doing in Boston?
Your
day job that you quit.
I was a mental health outreach worker. Because I love crazy people.
Do you love crazy people?
It's not that I love them. I don't fetishize them. I don't like. I'm just really great with people. Mm-hmm. So,
what did you like about working with them?
All right, here's the thing. Little quick backstory. I actually dropped out of college with one semester to go. Mm-hmm. That's one of those bouts I was dealing with.
Okay.
And the only work, I was a theater major, and so I had no real work experience except in college. I directed a play with adults with intellectual disabilities. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of like, my only experience was working with people with intellectual disabilities. So when I left, I got a job working at a group home. So I worked for that company for 5 years.
And you cash out and you come
cash
to Chicago.
Out my retirement fund at 27, and I moved to Chicago.
And so you take classes at Annoyance, and then in 2008 you're hired by Second City,
yeah.
Right? And you do a boat for 18 months.
Well, I did for 18 months within a 2-year period of time.
Okay, but you're also understudying, right?
I didn't I got back in 2010, and that's when I was hired to understudy ETC.
Now, was that for Brendan Jennings, right?
Mm-hmm.
And was that a dream of yours, a goal of yours, to be on a stage?
Well, I think that, like, obviously when you move here, you know of Second City, and I think that that was definitely a goal of mine that, and as I move out of Chicago in 2 weeks, a goal that was not achieved.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
Were you depressed, not depressed, maybe you were depressed over this, but were you disappointed? Because really, if you have gotten that close to understudying at Second City, one of the stages, you got a really good chance of being on a resident company.
I don't know about that. There's a lot of people that understudy. It's kind of like the carrots dangled in front of you.
Did you go in and say, hey, this is what I'd like to do, or did they come
in?
No,
and I probably should have. I don't know.
Do you feel that you ask enough for what you want?
I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Not at Second City.
Why not at Second City?
It just felt weird. I don't know.
Because you have no problem of asking at The Annoyance, right?
Well, I think it's different. Like, early on in my career at The Annoyance, like, I was still in classes there when Mick and I started doing Skinprov.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about Skinprov.
I was interning at The Annoyance, and Mick and I were just talking, and we basically they quickly greenlit this show where Saturdays at midnight, Mick, myself, and a group of men would improvise until we were all in our underwear.
And this show ran for...
It ran until the space closed, the Broadway Lawrence space closed. It ran for like 7 years.
And what did you learn improvising in your underwear?
I mean, it was actually kind of funny because I do a lot of things. I've done a lot of things in my life to kind of for body confidence.
Mm-hmm. To for your body image.
Yeah.
Okay.
I put myself in situations to force myself to be okay with my body, and that was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fucking fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a midnight show at The Annoyance. Most of the shows were awful, but they were really fun. So.
Then you also do solo stuff, and you've done, you've won your workshopping now,
yeah,
and that's Well Butrin Whore, right? But you've also done, Tim Paul's Retarded, and No Fats and No Femmes.
No Fats, No Femmes.
No Fats, No Femmes.
Mm-hmm.
Did I get it right that time?
You did.
Okay, great. You did not want your parents to see No Fats, No Femmes.
I don't think I've done a single show in Chicago that I would want my parents to see.
Why is that?
No Fats, No Femmes and Well Butrin Whore, there's a lot of like graphic depictions of my gay sex life and a little of my straight sex life from the late 90s.
Okay.
And and then like the shows that the plays that I've worked on at The Annoyance is there was, you know, I did a road trip comedy about 9/11. I did, you know, Irish period piece called Fisting.
Mm-hmm.
Bear Force One, which is about the first bear president of the United States battling Catholic terrorists. Oh, God. My so-called Afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
That was a musical set in heaven where a bunch of famous dead kids start questioning why God killed them. Like Anne Frank and JonBenet Ramsey and Ryan White. My parents don't get comedy, period.
Mm-hmm. Are they very Irish Catholic old school?
I think so, yeah. I mean, like, they're both from Dorchester.
Oh, they have brogues and stuff, right?
No, Dorchester is in Boston.
Oh, okay.
So, no, they're not, like, off the boat.
Okay.
But, you know, old school Boston, Irish Catholic, big families, lots of addiction issues, lots of mental health issues. I shouldn't say any more.
Do you feel self-conscious saying any more? Like, was there a lot of secrets in your house? Like, don't let people know?
It's not that, like, I talk about my life. I don't think it's my business to talk about anybody else's. Mm-hmm. And so if I talk about somebody else on my show, I'll change the name. Mm-hmm. But then also, like, if you're sleeping with me, Google it, because you'll know I'll talk about you.
Mm-hmm. Is there stuff that you won't talk about besides people, other people?
I mean, I think if you see my shows, I do talk. I mean, I talk about a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, for me, if it suits the show, I'll talk about it, even if it's a little vulnerable.
Like, what's, like, the thing that you were the scaredest to ever admit in one of these solo shows, and you're like, you did it, and then you're okay with it?
Of anything I've ever...
Yes. Like, this thing just terrified you. You didn't know if you should put it in the show or not, and you did.
I mean, I don't view it like that. I mean, I kind of write a show, and I know what the show's about. And I only put stories in there that kind of support the thematic spine. Mm-hmm. And so I've never really questioned anything I've put in. I've questioned stuff about, you know, like in my current show, like, I don't say the N-word. Mm-hmm. I say the phrase the N-word.
Right.
But I don't say the N-word. And okay. I kind of debated about that, because it's like, it's a story, and mm-hmm. the N-word was used.
But not only are you willing to talk about sex, which I think is great, you're also willing to talk about dark subjects. Mm-hmm. Where do you think you developed that?
Well, my solo stuff is all kind of, it's creative nonfiction, it's storytelling, a little bit of stand-up.
You don't do any characters in it?
No, I mean, it's pretty much me. Mm-hmm. I don't, it's not like a character showcase. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to use this for an SNL audition. Mm-hmm. Unless Lauren wants to hear about my filthy gay sex. Maybe he will, I'm not, who knows what he's into.
Have you been, has Lauren ever contacted you about SNL?
No, God no.
Okay. Is that something you'd like to do?
I think if you saw what I like to do, it's very far from what Saturday Night Live is. Like, if he wants to give me a job, I'll fucking take it. But that's really far from what I do. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing, honestly, like, to just kind of piggyback on what we were talking about before, about, like, with Second City. Mm-hmm. What I like to do is, I think, very different from what they do.
Yeah, because I would guess that in a way that you might not have been a fit for them. Because it's not for everybody.
Well, I think they're, yeah. I mean, I think what they've told me is just my voice is a little, it's unique.
and they had that conversation with you?
Multiple producers at separate times said the same exact thing. And so how did I think you, that's just their buzzword.
Yeah, but how did you take it when they said that? You knew it was...
Well, I'm like, well, I guess I'm not getting the job.
Right.
Yeah, I mean... I tell my stories, it's just me, this is my perspective, so about going dark or going mm-hmm. sexual, I mean, mm-hmm. I just talk about what's interesting for me, mm-hmm. and the stories that I like to tell. It's the stories I tell my friends, and so that's kind of what I like to tell on my shows.
And what do you like in solo material that you can express that you can't do in sketch and you can't do in improv?
Well... I don't necessarily agree that I can't express that, because, like, I'm currently in this sketch review called Invisible World.
Which was directed by Mick.
Mick.
Yeah.
And I think what was amazing about that process is because I got to be able to write a sketch show with Mick is an amazing experience.
And what's so amazing about working with him?
I think he really protects you, and he really, like, for me, and I think my style... I think I was able to write a lot of stuff that I wanted to write, and I didn't feel constrained. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you saw what I write, the sketches I write, I think it's a similar content-wise or rating. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the word I'm looking for. I think it makes sense if you saw my solo show and you saw my sketch show and you saw my improv show. I think that what I do comes through in all three.
All right, we're going to improvise now.
Oh, we're not done talking about me?
You like talking about you?
I fucking love it.
Really?
Yeah. No, we can improvise.
Because it's I don't know if you're enjoying this or not.
I am enjoying okay. this. I'm a narcissist.
Are you really?
No. I mean, this is fun for me.
Okay, great. Because I didn't know. It's hard for me to tell.
Yeah, we don't know each other.
No. And you're very, very subdued.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should I
you're
not be?
You're not high, right?
I'm not high.
Okay.
I do like getting high.
Do you?
Yeah, why not? Have you smoked marijuana?
I don't do any of that stuff anymore, Tim.
Well, are you a recovering addict?
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm yeah. not.
Right.
Sorry.
Did you ever think you might have a problem with it?
It's food.
Well,
I've talked about this with my therapist. I think I've lucked out. Because
mm-hmm.
everyone's getting drunk, and I'm like, I'm going to have fucking some Cherry Garcia.
Right.
And Cool Ranch Doritos. You right. gotta go sweet and savory.
Well, I struggle with the compulsive overeating too. And I remember when I was at the Annoyance, I used to get totally pissed off because when they would have like opening or closing parties, they'd make sure they had liquor, but they didn't have food or Diet Coke or anything that I could eat.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. I'm over it, apparently. All right. So we're improvising it.
You know they serve food at the new Annoyance.
I is it good?
It's actually pretty tasty.
Okay.
Especially if you're fucking ripped.
All right. This is going to be fun.
Is it?
Yeah.
We don't know. It will be. Jimmy, I now am worried that...
I gotta ask you something. Because you
single.
Have this kind of glib, kind of deadpan... delivery and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that really who you are?
I think so.
Okay.
Or
is
that... trying to get me to cry?
No. I can't do that. I'm not that powerful.
No, I think this is pretty much who I am.
Okay.
I don't know. This is how I teach my classes.
We have some students that were of yours. Mm-hmm. Are you guys here?
Yeah.
Is this pretty much how Tim teaches his classes?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And was it off-putting in all his glibness or his deadpan?
No.
Okay. I think for some students it is.
Why do you think that is? Because there's an expectation?
I don't know. I think I catches some people off guard
mm-hmm.
the way I talk. I don't know.
Okay.
Fuck them, right?
Yeah. I wish. Do you care about what people think of you?
Here's the thing, dude. I'm like, I love therapy.
I do too.
And I'm just.
What do you love about it?
I think it's good to check in with yourself. I think a lot of people don't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I can't really care. I don't really care. Like this. I was just gonna say something that sounded really rude. Like, I don't really care what you think of me.
Okay.
Do you know what? Oh, can I quote RuPaul?
Please do.
And I think this is RuPaul quoting somebody else, so if any of your fucking listeners lose their shit over this.
Right.
It's something along the lines of, like, what you think of me is none of my business.
Mm-hmm. Which is really good to say. How do you apply that?
I mean, I just really don't, like, unless I'm fucking you mm-hmm. or you're my friend,
mm-hmm.
I mean, what do I care what you think of me? Or unless I work with you, I guess.
Do you care about what the audience thinks?
I mean, I want them to fucking laugh.
Mm-hmm.
So
I would imagine you tell some stuff that people get shocked by, right?
Yeah.
Or uncomfortable by.
Mm-hmm.
Are you comfortable with that? Or how do you deal with that?
Well, I think then it's... I hope they leave my show. You know what it was? A friend of mine came to my show last week, and then I saw her last night.
Mm-hmm.
And after my show, she's like, I wish you had a Q&A. Because then she had questions for me. Just because she had heard some things and that she hadn't heard about before, and then she wanted some follow-up questions.
Did she say the things that she hadn't heard before?
She just wanted... her main question was how gay men deal with shit becoming involved during anal sex.
Okay.
And if we're like so like just like passe about it, or if it like kills the mood. I had told a story about somebody who
okay
had to shit.
All right.
Well, they didn't have to, they did. Oh, just a little. And he was at an Airbnb, and it was a little girl's room.
And?
Well, he went to the shower, and I really started questioning some of my life choices.
All right. I think we're ready to improvise.
Chinese tonight.
Well, Norman, it's Thursday.
I know it's Thursday. Okay, and I know you like to get Chinese food on Thursdays, but Stan, that's just, would it kill you to ask me what I wanted for dinner?
You're gonna drink that before dinner?
Well, I'm not having dinner because I don't want Chinese food. So I'm sorry that I'm having a fucking Coke Zero.
This is the first time I've heard of it, Norman.
This is the first time you've listened. At what point have you said, oh my god, I'm getting Chinese food, and I'm like, this is fucking a great idea. Stan, it's just,
I've got Peking duck.
I know.
I got some mushu. I got fortune cookies. I got you an extra one because I know you love having an extra fortune cookie.
Yeah, because I hope at one point, like, something will be in there that makes me feel good about myself. I don't eat it. The only thing I like about the food you order is a piece of paper that tells me something.
What are you doing?
I'm having a fucking fortune cookie.
You can't have a fortune cookie before we have the it's bad luck.
There's no such thing as bad luck.
Yes, there is.
According to what? That's fucking...
According to Chinese New Year. Give me that. And I thought your doctor said you shouldn't be eating sugar.
And when I read a fortune, I'm not eating sugar. I'm not... Who the fuck eats the cookies?
I do.
Then, fine. My doctor's okay with you eating sugar for me.
I don't know why you've got such a bug up your ass today. I got brown rice. I know you love brown rice.
I don't love brown rice.
Yes,
just,
you do.
I'm just diabetic, and it's better for me. Look, here's the thing. I've been meaning to tell you this for a while.
I heard you don't like Chinese food, but you're going to eat it anyway.
Well, that's like one thing. This is like a little bigger.
Okay. You're not supposed to eat sugar.
Okay. How about this? I don't tell you what I want to say, and you just keep fucking saying nonsense.
You're just saying that right now so you can throw me off.
Oh my god, you're impossible.
You're just saying that now to push me away. I can figure you out. You're very simple.
This is coming from the dude that eats the same thing every fucking day of the week.
Well, the reason I do is because I maintain my weight. And if you would do, you look heavier than I've ever seen.
Yeah, because I've gained weight.
Do you know how you gained weight?
Yeah, because I ate food. But I'm also lifting.
A Coke Zero, that's what you're lifting.
Yeah, that's like no calories, and for guys. I'm on prednisone. That's why I've been gaining weight. It's a steroid.
When were you going to tell me?
I tried 3 minutes ago.
What are you on that for? Depression?
No.
Are you depressed again?
You don't go on fucking steroids for depression.
My mother did.
Oh, good for your mother, but I think her doctor was way off.
And she didn't kill herself.
I didn't say your
mother
killed
I know you were
her.
Thinking, my mother would never have killed herself. She ran, she was drunk, and she ran into a tree. And that's not different than suicide.
I know. I don't think anybody
well, you were
that's suicidal
that. You were
is
implying
like,
that,
I'm going to get drunk and run into a tree. That will do it.
I don't think you should be on steroids.
Okay, great. I'll be off steroids, and then my fucking asthma will be out of control.
Don't make me feel guilty if you die from asthma.
Well, if you make me get off my fucking medication, I think you might have reason to be guilty.
Do you know what's good for asthma?
What?
Spicy food.
Great. I don't think Chinese food is necessarily, like, spicy.
I got it extra spicy this time.
Get fucking Thai, Indian, Mexican. You know you can actually just buy spice and put it on any fucking food.
I know that. I have spice in the cupboard there.
It just really... Dude, this... Here's the thing. People have been pushing Chinese food on us for fucking decades.
Oh, I don't want to hear your conspiracy theories.
No, it's just like, at what point? It's not even real Chinese food.
What do you mean it's not real? It said chop suey on the sign.
Have you been to China? They don't eat this shit.
Why would I have to go to China? I can go down the street and get it. Norman, I want you off those steroids.
You don't have any say over what medications
I'm on. Oh, yes, I do.
Are you my doctor?
I should be, because I know better than what your doctor knows.
Okay. What's something you know about my medical history that would fucking trump my doctor?
You have way too much unprotected sex.
What is that supposed to mean?
You asked me a question, and I'm telling you.
Well, here's the thing. If you're having some of it, it's with the same people. So if I'm going to get something, I would have gotten it already.
Do you know what the best thing is for?
What?
Abstinence. Don't do it.
Don't do abstinence? Fine.
No, no.
It was fun.
What did you enjoy about that?
I just like being mean to you.
Okay. Do you like to play that kind of character?
I think it's fun. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm mad that we didn't have a relationship. Let's be honest.
Well, don't you think it was implied?
I mean, sure. What was it?
Well, I think it could have been like a romantic relationship, mm-hmm. and then it seemed like at the end it was like roommates. Did you feel that?
Well, I mean, it was undefined. I mean, if that's a romantic relationship, fucking kill me.
Okay.
Don't kill me. That I wouldn't want to date you.
Okay, thank you.
But I'm probably not your type.
Okay. Let me ask you this. How could we have, in that scene, had more of a relationship?
I think by establishing it. Just by saying something, I mean.
Okay. Like?
I should have left you when I threatened it last Christmas.
Okay. That simple. That would have defined it.
I think so.
Okay.
I think it would have made it more concrete, got us on the same page.
And how do you think that would have helped our scene?
Well, I think we were just kind of like circling around. Like there was this tension mm-hmm. between us. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think a sexual or relationship tension is different than like a roommate tension.
Right.
So I think it would have opened up a portal for us to explore some stuff.
Yeah. I would agree with you.
Yeah.
All right.
My students are going to be so disappointed that I
didn't. Well, it was still a. Don't you think it was still a good scene?
I know. But it's kind of like I fucking yell at kids all week about establishing relationships, mm-hmm. and I failed them.
In your head, what do you think the relationship was in the scene?
I felt it was more roommate stuff.
Okay.
Or like I guess we could have been an elderly gay couple.
Okay. All right, so I had, at the beginning I thought, okay, we could have been a couple. Then I had roommates, and then kind of towards the end, I was like, I could have been your mother or your father. Mm-hmm. You know?
See, so if we had established the relationship early on, we wouldn't have had to worry about what we were.
Right.
We could have been just had fun exploring the defined relationship. Ugh. Isn't it fun breaking down improv?
It's very fun. All right, but you seem a little like,
No, it was fun.
No, but I mean about like, oh, your students are here, and do you get that as a teacher? Like, oh, I got to be perfect?
It's not that I have to be perfect. It's just, it seems I know better.
Right. But we don't know better all the time, right?
I do.
Okay, great. Great. Okay, we're going to take some questions from the audience.
Oh, fun.
Great.
Hey. Any questions to start us off?
Who's got a question for Tim?
Oh.
Hey, Tim, how are you?
It's Tom, is it?
Tom. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Jimmy, for that.
Tom's here at every show.
I get around.
Oh, great.
As do I.
My question was about your solo shows. Mm-hmm. Do you have a process you go through? How do you go about putting them together?
I think the process has been different for each one. For this most recent one, part of it is I would take, a lot of it's storytelling and stand-up, so I would take sections of the show, like just 5-10 minutes, and I workshopped it at different places like Thunderdome or Making Out with Wes Perry, different shows that were happening around the city. So I did that, like about 40% of the show I had workshopped at other places. And then a lot of it is I'll just get like really high and I'll do dishes and then I'll just put on the voice recorder on my phone and I'll just talk. And then the next day I'll transcribe it and see what I get. yeah. So.
Have you ever gotten some really weird stuff when you do it that way?
I think it's, I mean, obviously, because okay. I'm so fucking high. Yeah. I mean, there was one time I just kind of went off with the whole idea. Just like, it occurred to me that dogs have parents. And then that kind of... kind of threw me for a loop for a while, just because I love dogs and I have one, and at the time I had two. You figure out what happened, and one died.
Okay.
And and then I was like, they'll never know who their parents were. And then I'm like, we're like the first, like one of the, I guess there are other species like fucking killer whales or elephants, mm-hmm. but like by like, you know, it's just weird to think that like Some animals don't know their parents. Wouldn't that be great?
Great. Another question? Another question for Tim?
Now, you have a very defined and amazing beard. and from your headshot we had for the show, you had a handlebar mustache. Do you think facial hair helps or hurts you when you're trying to like audition for stuff?
First of all, that is not a headshot you found. That is a screen grab from a video I did 5 years ago.
And you were not happy that we were happy.
It's not that I wasn't happy. I was like, you had to, like, of all the photos of me online, you found a screen grab from a video? And that was during, I was doing a play that at The Annoyance called Fisting, where I played an old-timey Irish pugilist. So that was for the part where I had this big handlebar mustache. Uh-huh. And it was so good. It was a good mustache. I think it's funny because I think when I first signed with my agent, they were a little apprehensive about my facial hair. But at the time, I had it for a role. But I've booked stuff with facial hair, and I think that's, you know, it's kind of my thing. I look so cute with it. So
you know what's interesting, because I went on your website and saw all your commercials and stuff. All of your commercials are like you're the big guy with the beard.
Well, I can't change that aspect.
No, I know, but it seems like it's really worked for you.
I mean, I think it's nice that not many people look like me.
And because I've never had any luck with commercials, what is it that you've been able to take from improv to apply to booking commercials?
Honestly, I think, especially when they come to Chicago, they want that improvised button. For the stuff I've booked, it's because I've improvised in front of them, and I've given them something, and oftentimes the director will want to see that on set. Mm-hmm. So they saw something that I improvised, and they're like, I'll be on set. And they're like, okay, do you remember that thing you did? Do that.
All right, another question?
I'm an open book.
I think we're finding that out.
What's the best way to eat peanut butter Cheerios?
Okay, here's the thing. If you want to get like real slutty about it, they also have chocolate Cheerios. So it's an investment into two different boxes of Cheerios, but you mix them and it's like fucking Reese's Peanut Butter Cup cereal.
So, great, we got another question right here.
So I heard you were going away in 2 weeks. What's up?
Oh, I'm moving. It actually, so there's, I've lived in the same apartment for the last 4.5 years, and it's magical. And my friend Lori McLean had lived in it for 6 years, and I kind of swooped in. And the landlord is redoing it, so I was kicked out on October 1st. I had a few months' notice. And so I was freaking out because I didn't want to sign another lease in Chicago because I had a great deal. I was paying $650 a month for a one bedroom, everybody.
Which is in Old Town.
In Old Town.
Which is like, that is like rent.
It is, and it was the most magical. It was an old 1870s Victorian, and in the 60s it was big, like hippie fucking bohemian rehab. And it was.
You love to get high there.
I would just love to be there. I mean, get marijuana. You get mushrooms. You get gay sex.
Uh-huh. All in that block? Oh. And chicken wings. Isn't Burton Place, you weren't far from Burton Place?
No, that was all happening in my apartment.
Oh, okay.
Jesus. I don't have to fucking...
I know.
If you have all that, you don't have chicken wings.
Right.
So basically, I just dropped an email to the infamous Beth Kliegerman. Mm-hmm. And within 20 minutes, I had a job offer to go in the Norwegian
Army. Now, you say that with a little sarcasm.
Oh, I love Beth.
Okay. All right.
But, she's great. I fucking emailed her being like, hey, do you have anything after October 1st? And then 20 minutes later, she offered me a job.
But you're going to do this, and then you're going to L.A.
I am.
So how did you decide? Because a lot of people that come to Chicago, they either go to New York or L.A. You've been here, 8, 9 years?
Mm-hmm.
How did you decide, okay, I'm going to go do a boat, and then I'm going to go to L.A.? It's time to go.
I think it's just all my friends are there. I went out there. I was there a year and a half ago for the first time. And I loved it. And a lot of my friends are there, and so...
Are you afraid about going out there?
Not really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
What do you hope happens for you out there?
My God, I just want to get my dick sucked within minutes.
Okay.
I want to be a working... I mean, I would love to continue working and create and do shows. I don't know, but like...
Is there any I want to be on a TV show or I want to...
I like having creative input.
Mm-hmm. You like to collaborate.
I like to collaborate. I mean, honestly, I'm open for any opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of just a leap of faith,
mm-hmm.
see what the fuck happens, and let's hope that I'm not depressed, right?
Yes, because I'll tell you, I was depressed out there. Chicago's a much better place to be depressed than L.A.
Really? Have you lived by yourself in a one-bedroom apartment for 4 months during fucking polar vortex after polar vortex?
Was that hard for you, depressing-wise? Like, I suffer from seasonal affect disorder as well. Do you?
No, I'm lucky. I get depression throughout the year.
Okay.
I don't need the fucking winter.
Okay.
The thing is, I have a lot of great friends out there.
Mm-hmm.
And a prescription, so I'm good.
Well, good luck. And we wish you luck. What, big smile on your face. What is that about?
Because I'm happy. Am I allowed to be happy? Jesus.
Yes, you're allowed to be happy, Tim.
Are we fighting?
Yes, we are fighting.
Are you mad?
No, I'm not mad. It's just very hard to read you.
What do you want me to...
I don't know. It's for me. I've never met you. I don't, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is weird.
I mean, I've had a blast.
Yeah.
I had a blast improvising with you and interviewing you.
Yeah, so that's...
But, I mean, you have such... Your delivery is so, deadpan and stuff, you don't know where to come in. Have people ever said that, in terms of your timing? It's great.
I don't get many complaints.
Okay. It's not a complaint.
It sounded like one.
I'm having a good time with you.
I'm having a great time.
We got to wrap this up.
I know we do.
Okay. What is one piece of advice you would give an improviser starting out in comedy today?
Do your own shit. Don't wait around for opportunities.
Tim Paul, thank you so much for being our guest.
Oh. What? I didn't know.
Okay.
Are we still filming?
Yes, we're still filming.
What? It's never ending.
Where can we see you before you go?
Well, I think by the time this podcast goes up, mm-hmm. you'll have to buy a ticket for the Norwegian Epic.
Okay.
And then after they'll be in L.A. I do, for the people in the audience, I have my last night... I have Invisible World, the Mick Napier sketch show at The Annoyance. My last show is this Saturday.
And check that out because it's great.
Yeah. Best of Chicago 2014, Chicago Magazine.
And what time is it? 8 o'clock?
8 o'clock. And then at midnight is closing night of Will Butrin Horror for the current run at The Annoyance.
Okay, so check those both out.
Also, October 23rd, Messing with a Friend.
Oh, my God. She's great, isn't she?
She's wonderful.
How do you guys work together?
Oh, great. I've done the show a few times before, and she's... I mean, here's the thing. We're both filthy.
Right. But how are you different in terms of you're both filthy, but how are you both filthy? Because it's different filth, don't you think?
But the thing is, we'll both go wherever the other person wants to go. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, if she goes somewhere, I'm going with her and mm-hmm. vice versa. No matter what filth is thrown out there.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really matter because... Mm-hmm. We're great improvisers.
Great. You know what? I think that is the first time someone on the show has admitted that they're a great improviser.
Oh, my God. Well, I guess it's true.
Jim Paul, thank you so much for being our guest.
And there you have it. It's another episode of Improv Nerd is in the Can. I want to thank our guest, Tim Paul, and I want to thank him for his honesty. And I love what he talked about Second City and how they told him, you know, he really wasn't a fit there. But this guy's got so much confidence. He's got such a strong voice. He has nothing to worry about. I also want to thank our home base here, the good people at Stage 773, for treating us like such rock stars. My producer, Dan Schiffmacher, my assistant, Chloe Fitzpatrick. And if you want more information about me, Jimmy Corain, and my improv blog and improv therapy or an Improv Nerd t-shirt, go to jimmycorain.com for more information. Also, we are on Feral Audio, and it is a podcast collective, and go check it out. Some of the funniest, most innovative, original podcasts are happening on feralaudio.com. We're also Improv Nerd. We're taking over social media. We're taking it over one step at a time. First, we're on Facebook page, so go like us on Facebook. It really helps with my low self-esteem. Just go to the Improv Nerd page and like us. We're at Twitter, improv_nerd, so follow us. And we have a great YouTube channel with little clips from the show, and they're wonderful. And I want to thank you for listening, because we couldn't do this podcast without you. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Hello, I'm Kyle Ayers. I'm the host of Never Seen It, the podcast where comedians rewrite famous movies and TV shows they've never seen, and then we give them a read in studio. This is a clip I want to play for you guys from an episode where Langston Kerman rewrites Scarface. He's never seen it, but he wrote a script based on what he thinks he knows about it, and here's a clip. Give it a listen.
All right, Scarface, The New Frontier. Interior, happening discotheque. Remember when we call clubs discotheques? LOL, the 70s were crazy. Night. The crowd bustles with young, hot Mexicans who are supposed to be Cuban and all are dressed in butterfly collared shirts and pants that look like JNCO jeans and pleated khakis had a really weird baby. There's sex in the air and Poppy wants a whiff.
Oh my God.
Scarface, 22 to 45.
Like he's a television audience demographic.
Devilishly handsome. Not even a little bit Italian looking, so get that out of your dumb brain. Walks through the crowd with the confidence of a man who's going on MTV Cribs with the Ying Yang Twins one day. Does he actually have a scar on his face? Fuck no. Why would you even ask that? That's not important. What's important is that he is not at all a problematic stereotype and that he has come for his cocaine. As he approaches the red rope of the VIP, pronounced ve a pe in Spanish,
oh my God.
He spots his dear friend, who is almost certainly going to become his enemy by the end of the film, Smooth Skin. Scarface yells out his signature line.
Ciao, Bella. It's me, Scarface.
Oh, my God.